There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Somebody just tweeted out that the Bills have already been called for roughing the passer on Patrick Mahomes in this game for next week.
They have their flags ready. They might have an extra flag in their pocket, the refs. Patrick Mahomes might have a flag that just drops out of his pocket, too.
What if they came? What if the captains came out for the coin toss and the ref said, just so you know, you've already been flagged for roughing the passer. We start the game that way.
They give Von Miller a side eye. We're looking for you. I have my eyes on you.
Well, we all have our eyes on the Pirates. Unfortunately, they've done absolutely nothing this offseason at a time when I feel like this city desperately needs them. They could swoop in here and be heroes to us all. And they don't have to do that much, but something would be nice. Instead, as I open the show with, I don't even know the guys' names other than McCutcheon. It doesn't matter. One of them was named Alvarado, was he? Is that a guy?
Yeah, the relief pitcher.
Yeah, good for him. One of them's named Caleb Ferguson and one Valdez, the Exxon Valdez, they signed.
Yeah, they're all pitchers for the bullpen.
And then Spencer Horwitz was their big trade acquisition. It's just horrific, I think, anyway. Let's see what Johnny Pirato thinks from Pittsburgh Sports Now, if I'm correct there. Is that right,
baseball.
Johnny? Pittsburgh Baseball Now. Johnny?
Pittsburgh Baseball Now.
Pittsburgh.
And various others, Draft Nation and many others.
And many others, plus shows like
many
this.
Others.
And
plus nobody will hire me.
Well yes.
I tell the truth.
Or either that or a lot of people are hiring you. I can't figure out which.
A little bit of each, yeah.
What about this offseason, Johnny? What is happening here? This has been less eventful than last offseason when they signed Chapman.
Mind-boggling, and nobody will give an answer other than, well, free agency's slow, and you know you have to wait it out. Well, a lot of players are coming off the board. It's just baffling. It's like they're not even trying. I mean, like you said, some of the guys they signed, or they make these waiver trades for a guy like Brett DeGus, who I don't know if they think they're gonna hop on the Gus bus and go to the World Series with him or exactly what they're doing. But it's just, you know, I guess you're just waiting for the microwave tailors of the world to take hardly any discounts and then Yasmani Grandals like they did last winter and go with that. But even last winter, they made a few free agent signings. They signed Martin Perez. They traded for Marco Gonzalez. I know neither guy worked out, but at least they were players that you know, the average fan had heard of. And this winter, they're just content to make waiver trades and, you know, when your biggest offseason acquisition is Spencer Horwitz after a 76-86 season, I don't see a lot of hope to contend in 2025 if that's your idea of a major move.
I just don't understand why it's not possible to bring in like one bat. I would have gone for two, you know, reasonably priced, but like Jock Peterson went for what, $16 million a year? That's not that much money. Just somebody that you can say, with him, you would just say, you're our cleanup hitter. The projections I see, Johnny, have Kiner Falefa leading off. He had a .265 on base percentage here last year. Kutch in the leadoff role. And then, like, Josh Palacios playing for this team. Their bench has Billy Cook on it. It might as well have Ron Cook coming off the bench. Is this...
Pally, I'll get you a pitch hit, Pally.
am I missing something with the lineup here? There's no way to configure it where it looks anywhere close to good.
No. I mean, you said it all. I'd say Kiner Falefa hitting leadoff. And, I mean, he is a good utility player. He's a good glove guy at a lot of positions. But he's, you know, for one, he's not an everyday shortstop. I mean, I talked to a lot of Yankees people at the winter meetings, and Kiner Falefa was their everyday shortstop in 2022. And they said, you know, he's a great guy. He's a good bench guy. But he was totally stretched at shortstop in 2022. And that's why the Yankees went with Anthony Volpe. I should say 22, and then he went with Anthony Volpe in 23, and now he's their established shortstop. Like you said, I mean, I love Andrew McCutchen. He can still help. He hit 20 home runs last year, but certainly he's not what you consider an ideal cleanup hitter at this point in his career. And, you know, a guy like Spencer Horwitz, I do like the fact that he has a .355 career on base percentage, but it's only 425 plate appearances in the big leagues. And, you know, I don't know if he hits the type of power that they really desperately need in that lineup. And first base is usually the place where you put a power hitter instead of more of an on-base and singles and walks guy than Horwitz. And, you know, they need bullpen help, and all they keep doing is picking up these guys on waiver trades or signing a guy off a good winter ball season in Dominican like Elvis Alvarado. And, you know, and I realize sometimes these little moves pay off, but when all you're doing is making little moves and nothing else, you better hope for a really big payoff on these guys, because there's a reason most of them put on waivers and most of them have been DFA'd, because they're obviously not good enough to be on other teams' 40-man rosters.
I mean, Josh Palacios, I thought he was gone. I kind of like him coming off the bench, but then I look at the actual bench, and it's the human rain delay. I thought he was gone, too. Jared Triolo, Nick York, and Ron Cook. That can be nobody's bench. And where is Henry Davis? What is his fate this year?
Henry Davis probably will start off at Triple-A unless he has a good spring training. And, you know, I mean, at some point, they're just going to have to come to grips with the fact that they really screwed up picking him first overall in the draft. I mean, I've really seen nothing in the time he's been in the big leagues over the past two seasons that makes me think that he can even be a regular in the big leagues, let alone be an impact player that you expect the first overall pick in the draft to be. And, you know, to me, he's kind of a non-factor. He wasn't invited to Pirate Fest, and hardly anybody mentioned his name the whole weekend. So Henry's sort of out of sight, out of mind. It looks like Joey Bart's going to be the starting catcher, and rightfully so. He had a good year last year after they got him from the Giants in a trade, first full week of the season. But in Henry Davis's case, I mean, at this point, I think you just write that off as it was a really bad move and it didn't work out.
If you follow the Pirates and you want good opinion, good info, Johnny Pirotto on Pittsburgh Baseball Now. He's been covering the team for a long, long time. Johnny, you had a great story on Skeens. It looked like you sat down with Skeens and him talking about how many innings he wants to pitch. Tell us about that interview.
Yeah, I like Skeens. You know, he's obviously kind of the modern celebrity guy, him and his girlfriend on TikTok and everything. But yet, you know, when you talk to him, he's an old school baseball player at heart. He really is. And, you know, he always talks about the word he uses is volume. He wants to provide volume. And what he means by that is a lot of innings pitched. He wants to go out there and he wants to pitch 7 or 8 innings every time out. If it were up to him, I think he'd pitch all 9 if they would let him every time out. So I asked him, I said, you know, what do you think a good year would be innings wise this year? And he said, 240, and I almost fell over because you just don't hear that. Nobody in the big leagues has thrown that many innings since 2014. There were only 4 pitchers in the big leagues last year, Joe, that pitched 200 innings. And he knows that realistically they are not going to let him throw 240 innings. But he said, that's how I'm going to train. I'm going to have my body ready to go out there and pitch 240 innings this year. And I was just very, very impressed with that answer. I mean, you talk about a guy in this modern era where pitchers really have so many governors put on them. For him to just say, hey, I want to go out and pitch 240 innings, that tells you the work ethic that he has and just the desire to be a good pitcher.
Man, I love that story. And sticking with him, I mentioned this yesterday. He had a couple quotes coming out of there, like the fact that they're peeing away games left and right, and they can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
He doesn't strike me as a guy, even if he's only here for, let's say, 4 years or something, who's going to be a wallflower. He strikes me as a guy who's going to pipe up when he sees fit. Do I have that right or not?
Yeah, and he addressed that the other day briefly. It wasn't a big topic of conversation, but he did say that he thinks he'll pick his spots to speak up. And, you know, the one thing is, you know, he was a rookie last year. And, I mean, regardless of how big his profile was, him being the first overall pick, it's hard for a rookie to come in the clubhouse and start saying, let's do this, let's do that. It's just not a rookie's place to do that. But I think that he realizes he's earned enough currency in that clubhouse with his performance and the professionalism that he carries himself with at all times, that I think now he will speak up. I don't think he'll be one of these guys that every week will be calling a team meeting and ripping into his teammates. But I do think if there's something that needs to be said, that he is going to say it. And I think that he's comfortable in doing it. And I think he realizes he has the respect of his teammates, or if he does do it and pick the right spots to do it, that his message will really get through to the rest of the team.
I guess I meant that in two ways. One is the way you're talking about, but more I meant it, he doesn't seem like as he grows older here that he's going to stay quiet with the organizational direction if he doesn't like it. Do you get that impression?
Yes, I do. I think, and I think it was very telling. You know, I believe it was Kevin Gorman, your friend Gormy the Owl from the Pittsburgh Crib. Your friend the Owl. He asked him if there had been any, you know, discussion about a long-term deal. And pardon me if I don't exactly quote the question correctly, but that was the gist of it. And Skeen said, no, not really. And that's moved on to the next topic. So, you know, I got the feeling, one, they haven't had talks, and two, I'm not so sure after his first offseason here as a major leaguer, I know it's his second offseason overall, seeing such a lack of commitment, he probably already figures, well, one, I don't know if I want to be with a team whose biggest offseason acquisition is Spencer Horwitz, or two, I know there's no chance in you know what, that they're ever going to sign me long term, so I'll just play it out and wait till they ship me somewhere else.
What were some of the sights and sounds you saw at FanFest? Were you there for Travis Williams? I call him the human shield for Bob Nutting, taking all the questions. Were you there for that? Did it get ugly at any point? And why didn't Bob just take a couple questions?
Well, Bob, that's a good question. I don't have an answer because I haven't talked to Bob in at least 2 years, maybe longer than that. He just doesn't make himself available. And I guess he doesn't want to face the music. And I know they said, you know, he spoke with season ticket holders individually, and you know, that's all well and good. But I think the common fan, the person that doesn't, can't afford season tickets, and maybe can only go to, you know, maybe three games a year, that goes to Pirate Fest, probably would like to hear from the owner and have a chance to talk to him too. And but yeah, it was there's certainly fan frustration there. And you know, when a little bit of a chant, it didn't last long, probably about 5 seconds, sell the team, started, you know, within the first 5 minutes of the Q&A, that kind of showed the fans weren't real happy. And a lot of the questions the fans asked were true about lack of off-season moves, would they consider signing Skeens, and all that Travis Williams and Ben Charrington, and not so much Derek Shelton, because he was asked more about roster management and player use more than overall general organizational philosophy and spending money. They just politely gave answers that really said nothing. And that's what we've come to expect from the Pirates. Nobody ever shoots straight in that organization. They just talk and talk and talk and talk in circles. And, you know, and I don't think the Pirates realize how much they infuriate their fans by doing that, instead of just shooting straight and saying, here's what we're trying to do.
Johnny, I've been remiss in not including City Limits in this conversation. He's going to pipe up with a question, and I certainly hope it's about Jalen Beeks.
Thank you, my friend Joe. It's kind of about Jalen Beeks, not exactly, but we saw the lineup and the bullpen both have their moments in negative ways last year. Which one gives you larger area of concern going into this season, because they haven't added much to both areas?
Just the lineup in general is the one that has me concerned. I mean, you know, they were 21st in the league in runs scored last, or 23rd in the major leagues in runs scored last year. And they've really done nothing to upgrade it other than Spencer Horwitz. And again, I think he can help. I don't think he's a bad player, but I don't think he can make the impact. Well, wow, you added him and now all of a sudden you have a really good offense. And, you know, that's the one that just bothers me. You know, the other things will kind of should work out with the type of, you know, players and depth they have, but they need to score some runs. You can't, they have good starting pitching, and you can't afford to waste as much good starting pitching as they did last year, and certainly looks like they're going to do this year.
Yeah, they have good starting pitching for sure. They have a guy who might become an all-time pitcher at the top of their rotation. However, the rest of the rotation, I'm curious about. I think Keller is what he is at this point, which is a good pitcher, but one who falters late in seasons pretty badly. Jared Jones, very talented. And then who, Johnny? Like, I'm not sure this is going to be the 71 Orioles where you have 320-game winning type pitchers. You know what I mean? I don't know beyond Skeens. I think we know with Keller. And then what? Like, how good will this rotation be?
Well, I think it's one of those situations where it's going to be better by the end of the season than it is at the beginning. I mean, obviously, Skeens is, I would be shocked if he had a sophomore slump. He's just so good, and he's so talented, and he's so driven and so focused. You know, I think Jared Jones will be better this year for the experience he had last year. Keller worries me a little bit. He had a really rotten second half, and they seem to gloss over that whenever you ask the Pirates about, hey, you know, is he going to be okay? I think Bailey Falter is certainly a serviceable number four starter. And, you know, it'll be interesting. Johan Oviedo coming off after missing a year with elbow surgery. You know, he had some really good moments in 2023, and he showed he was able to eat innings. He pitched 177 and two-thirds, and maybe they used him a little too much is why he blew out. But they have a lot of really good young pitchers in Triple-A with Bubba Chandler, who's, you know, considered one of the top 20 prospects in baseball, Thomas Harrington, Mike Burrows, Braxton Ashcraft. Now, whether these guys pan out or not, you never know with prospects. But I do think if a couple of those guys pan out, that they could have a pretty good rotation. But, Joe, I'll be honest, I would like to see them go out and sign a veteran starter, somebody, you know, you could count on for 160 to 180 innings. I just think it would be, I think I would feel more comfortable if I were the Pirates going into spring training, going into the season, knowing that I had one more veteran guy that you can count on.
Yeah, and lastly, that leads to my final question is, how about parlaying, since they're unwilling to sign a hitter and they can't draft and develop any, how about parlaying some of these arms up to and including Keller, I would say? Like, anybody but Skeens is on the table for me. If you could bring back an impact bat, that seems to be what they have in surplus is young arms.
Yeah, and, you know, again, you know, they did trade Luis Ortiz and a couple of minor league left-handers of some account for Spencer Horwitz, which I thought was a bit of an overpay for a guy that's 27 and only has 425 major league plate appearances. So, I would think that with some of these young arms, they'd be able to get something. But I mean, if you have to give up that much young pitching to get a Spencer Horwitz, I don't know how they would go about getting an established big league hitter for what they have. And that really surprised me that they gave up as much as they did for him. And now I don't know if that's the price or if that's just Ben Cherington overpaying or what, but I mean, there's a lot of young arms that they have, and you know, and I know it's a cliche, but everybody does need starting pitching. Well, probably everybody but the Dodgers need starting pitching now, and I just find it hard to believe they can't strike a deal. It's almost like they're in paralysis, like they can't do anything. They can't sign any free agents. They can't make any trades. They're just like in limbo, like they're in suspended animation or something.
Johnny, you're a wonderful man. I don't think people talk about that enough. Limits, I know you agree, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It's always good talking with you guys. Thanks for having me.
You too, man. It's never a bad time to talk football in this town. I don't know that I'm entirely happy with the name of this segment, even though it was the name that I put forth. It's called The Football Fix. Don't the PM guys do a football fix? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, they call it something like that. They have a lot of names for different things.
Well, something like that is very different than exactly that. What do they call it?
Do you want to do Pomp and Joe professors like they do PM team professors and grade the Steelers and grade the Pirates and grade the Penguins on things?
No. I'd rather do something that has a different name, but that I can't remember what we used to do with Folsy at the commands. It was a football fix every day, but it wasn't not the Wheel of Ball.
Not the Wheel of Ball?
Although I'd love to do a Wheel of Ball. But now that the Steelers are done and there's only three more little tiny football games left, isn't that sad until next year?
Don't worry, Joe. We have the USFL or the XFL or what do they call it now? The UFL, the combined USFL and XFL.
Did they combine them?
Yeah, they did.
Well, we're going to talk football every day of the year via this new segment. Perhaps the Limited Express? Could we call it that?
Ooh.
The Limited Express?
The Limitless Express.
The Limitless Express.
How about that?
But there's no football in the name. Does that bother you or no?
No, I think it's kind of cool, but it also has Limitless in it.
The Limitless Express.
The Limitless Wonder Express.
That's too long. And
the
then
Limitless
you lose,
Express.
Yes, you lose the rhythm of it when you add in the word wonder. Okay, then let's call it the Limited Express. Maybe by tomorrow you could whip up an opening for it. Something funny. Yeah. Maybe you could get Ron's voice in there. Maybe you could get every voice there's been on this show. Him too. Yeah. Okay. Yep. That's it, man.
just put all the drops in there.
Put some sort of music behind it. Put our best drops in there. And the fake brands. And go with it. The Limitless Express. Yes. How could anybody say no to that?
All right, we're off and running on the Limitless Express. Here we go.
All right.
Pro Football Talk. What's next for the Las Vegas Raiders after, and we'll get into this, the Chicago Bears find themselves a head coach. We'll get to that in a moment. But one name that was thrown out there by Mike Florio, Pete Carroll. Don't overlook the possibility of Pete Carroll joining the Raiders potentially as their head coach, with the reminder that Tom Brady is the minority owner of the Raiders. But I feel like Brady's influence is so much more than just being a minority owner and owning, I think it's like 5% of the team. It seems like he has significant influence. Would you be interested in seeing Pete Carroll return to the NFL?
I mean, it's not like Pete Carroll is 97. He's 73. Granted, that's getting up there, but Pete Carroll? I mean, he always struck me as a guy that was 20 years younger than whatever his chronological age was. His enthusiasm, his boyish enthusiasm for the job, I think he would attract some pretty good assistant coaches. I'm not one to write off somebody just because of age. And to be honest with you, Pete Carroll has an extremely similar resume to one Mike Tomlin. All those years in Seattle, he went to a couple Super Bowls and won one of them. That sounds familiar. He should have won two of them. His career winning percentage is right around 60%. He had years of, you know, all kinds of double-digit win seasons. And he was even 9-8 the last 2 years of his career. We put up statues for going 9-8 around here. Oh, my God, what a great job the coach did. Their over-under at the beginning of the year was only 7.5 or 8.5 wins. He exceeded that again. What a miracle worker. Well, Pete Carroll wins all the time, too. He had one losing season since 2012 in Seattle. One. So if that's your criteria, and it sure does seem to be for a lot of people with this coach, then what's so bad about that? In his playoff career, he's 11-11, 10-9 in Seattle. Yeah. I here's the thing. I wouldn't just write off Pete Carroll as a ridiculous idea.
No, I am someone who, maybe it's because we've seen it with the Steelers for so long, thinks that you should tend to go with offensive innovation when you're a younger team, do not have an established quarterback, because the Raiders are going to draft one, whether it's Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, or find a guy in the 26th draft, they're going to draft one. But Pete Carroll's the type of culture shift maker, the type of culture changer for an organization that I think that the Raiders could benefit from, that they thought they had from Antonio Pierce and everything he did as the interim head coach with Josh McDaniels out the door. Pete Carroll makes way too much sense for a Raiders team that is just so dysfunctional and disorganized. He made USC into a powerhouse and really stabilized them. Did the same thing with Seattle, an organization that, I mean, yes, had the Mike Holmgren era and going to the Super Bowl, but took them to the greatest heights that they've ever seen. He could significantly help the Raiders. How about what Marlon Humphrey said, the cornerback for the Ravens? We know that he was talking about, well, knowing maybe what's going on with the Steelers, and he won't comment on what's going on inside their locker room.
Yeah.
He said to The Athletic, this team is done.
Which team?
The Ravens. When I look at it, some guys will be here, some guys won't. Who knows what? I know I have no more years guaranteed on this existing contract, so it's whatever message you have. You could be on this team, you could be on another team. Some guys will say, some guys will stay, some guys will leave, and I fall into the same bucket. So the message is, we lost, get over it, and we'll see where the offseason goes.
Man, I heard Brady talking about that same sort of theme. I think what Marlon Humphrey meant is this team, as currently constituted, is done. And Brady talked about that on one of the playoff broadcasts the other day. Like, in the NFL, it's a one-year business, and after that 1 year, everything can change. You think you're an up-and-coming team with a bunch of young, I'm not saying this is the Ravens, but for anybody, you think this is an up-and-coming team, we're going to go on a long, no. The NFL changes too fast, you know? Look at RG3. Remember that Washington team he was on? It looked like he would be there for a decade, and they would be really good and always have a chance to win, and then he shredded his knee. It's a one-year-at-a-time league, and every year is its own lifetime. I think that's what Humphrey meant. Like, this is done. We'll see about next year, but this is done.
I don't think he meant like the entire window of the Ravens
right.
is done, but as it's currently constructed, will they try to run Mark Andrews out of town after what happened?
No.
They have offensive linemen. They're starting to get older, and they got to pay Kyle Hamilton. There's going to be a lot of decisions on that defense as well. They paid Roquan Smith. What are they going to do at corner outside of Humphrey? He might not even be back.
Well, they drafted Wiggins, so I thought had a pretty good rookie year.
Yeah.
They're good,
Humphrey,
man.
Humphrey to the slot.
They're good. As I said yesterday, the difference between them and other teams and the Steelers, yeah, there's going to be 31 teams that are disappointed, but the Ravens are winning some playoff games these days. Their window is wide open. They've got a superstar quarterback. And I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of this year, they're one of two or three favorites to win the Super Bowl next year.
Oh, boy, Joe. We interrupt this football breakdown with some breaking news. The Paul Skeens one-of-one rookie debut patch autograph card has been found.
Oh, where?
By an 11-year-old collector from Los Angeles. Topps
wow.
just announced it, that it's just been found. How about that?
Tell me more. Read me the story or the tweet.
So Topps literally tweeted that out. Breaking as of 12:30. The Paul Skeens one-of-one patch has been pulled by an 11-year-old collector in L.A., and then, obviously, the Pirates were offering the season tickets for 30 years, a softball game at PNC Park.
That's what Topps is reporting?
No. Well, that's what the Pirates' offer was.
Okay, yeah.
But an 11-year-old has pulled the card.
That is incredible.
What is this kid going to offer either the Pirates, or what's he going to do with this card?
How much did the general tell us it was worth? Do you remember? Can you text him?
Yeah.
When we go to break here?
It was thousands and thousands of dollars.
No, I thought it was over $1 million. By the time that it matures. You don't have to text him right this second, although it would be nice for this segment. Can you imagine that moment in that kid's house? Assuming he was in his house when he opened it?
On like Christmas morning or something?
It's Willy Wonka. He got the golden ticket.
But if it was like Christmas or... How's it pulled right now on January 20th or whatever, 21st? Maybe it was just reported to Topps that he found it. I wonder when it was actually pulled, and if, like, let's say it was a Christmas gift, or they pulled it around New Year's, and everything.
Did they give his name, or they don't want to give his name, I guess?
I don't think you can give an 11-year-old's name.
I mean, you could. I was just curious. Has been pulled by an 11-year-old collector, the rookie debut patch card.
Can you be an 11-year-old and be a collector of baseball cards? I guess, yeah, but can you be dubbed an official collector?
Sure. The Pirates are offering, let's go back to the Pirates offer, season tickets behind home plate for 30 years, softball game for 30 people at PNC Park. I don't remember seeing that one. That's a nice little thing. You could make that a wiffle
ball
game.
We'd have ball and wiffle ball championship there at PNC Park.
Two Paul Skeens autographed jerseys and a meet and greet with Skeens.
Plus
are,
you get
are
to
among
meet
what they're offering.
Livy Dunn and sit in her suite. Could you imagine the 11-year-old kid sitting in the suite with Livy Dunn watching a baseball game?
What if you took that and then ordered them to sign a free agent as the last part of that deal? You say you need to sign somebody.
You need to sign Pete Alonso. That is the requirement.
It's a nice offer, but I'm going for the cash. I'm going for all cash. What does the general tell you? Did he get back to you yet?
Not yet, no. I texted him 30 seconds ago. And maybe he'll text me back and say, limits, limits, limits.
Yeah, that's what I always do, I know.
Yeah.
Finally, this thing's opened. I wish I had gotten that.
Bob thought it was fake.
Wait. Somebody has a... is this real? Go to ABC News. Boy's reaction to rare one-of-one Paul Skeens baseball card goes viral. No, this is wrong. This is not right.
What?
This is a bogus story. Why is this out here?
Topps is the one that put it out there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This was a bogus story. This had a 6-year-old getting it. Are we sure this story's real?
Yes. The maker of the card put it out there that it was found.
All right. Unbelievable. I'd go for all the... hold on a second here, limits. Did TAE get fooled on this?
No. So there are multiple one-of-one.
Texas kindergartner goes viral for finding Paul Skeens' card. So, Pirates and Skeens respond back on January 10th.
There are multiple one-of-one cards for Paul Skeens, but it's this autographed debut patch. It's the patch that he had on his jersey the day that he debuted,
okay.
And he autographed the card. That's what the Pacific one-of-one is. Like, there are multiple one-of-one cards,
okay.
But this is like the model standard of one-of-ones that everybody was chasing.
I'm sorry for muddling the proceedings there.
No, that's okay. I'm glad I could clarify.
I was very confused.
So people are tweeting at us now that it's been found.
That is awesome.
Thank you kindly.
Well, let's get that info from the general, and we have a treat coming up next. We'll keep you updated on that.
And if we don't hear from him today, we'll talk to him tomorrow.
And I'm very sorry. We don't have to talk to him. I just want, we'll definitely talk to him tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for interrupting our first edition of the Limitless Express.
That's okay.
Actually, you interrupted it, but
yeah,
it was worth it.
It was.